This is Layla Mudin, RD. I see patients every day here at the Hoffman Center. If you require a nutrition consult with me, but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.
Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, today with Hoffman Center nutritionist Layla Mudin. It's our weekly Q&A. And a reminder, before we get to your questions, Layla Mudin is available for consultation at the Hoffman Center. Usually patients see me and then see her as part of a medical workup, but she also has her own practice within the practice at the Hoffman Center, sees patients independently, and imparts to them some of the great nutritional advice that you hear on this podcast. And that works well for some patients who perchance can't get to New York. She'll do phone consultations with you. If you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor, send medical tests and results to Layla, and she'll analyze them in your problem and help you find a way to support whatever condition you have with a proper nutritional approach. With supplements and diet. Check out drhoffman.com for how you can become a patient of the Hoffman Center or of Layla. All right, to the question. Let's repeat the question.
Okay, we've got an email here. Dr. Metso has a formula that he claims removed artery plaque called nanobacteria. His contention is that nanobacteria is responsible for heart disease, and he has clinical data and evidence that's that it's being cured with this therapy, which includes tetracycline. Mm-hmm. What are your feelings about this, Dr. Hoffman?
I was there at the first lecture that he gave on the subject, and it generated a lot of excitement because it was controversial and it was exciting. And, you know, we know that there are potentially infectious components to heart disease. So, for example, people who have periodontal disease have a higher risk of heart disease. It's actually a risk factor. It's a known risk factor for heart disease. So perhaps the good results that you obtain when you give tetracycline may be a... By the way, that's the number one medication used for periodontal disease. In fact, people who have periodontal disease are sometimes given low-dose tetracycline. It's both antibacterial and anti-inflammatory. So maybe there's something, but this nanobacteria is a little bit like the unicorn. It's something that he proposes is the causative agent for heart disease. They say it's very hard to see. You have to use special microscopy to see the nanobacteria. The nanobacteria are nano, which means they're tiny. Nano means tiny. Yeah. So they're actually some new scientific discovery, a species unto themselves of unique organisms that are even more tiny than bacteria, that really the scientific literature does not support their existence. And there, I think there's some top scientists looking at this. And I think that it's an eccentric theory that hasn't been borne out by scientific evidence. Also, he proposes the use of a proprietary suppository that contains EDTA and perhaps some herbs that chelate you and pull the calcium out of your arteries, and claims that there's dramatic reversals of your plaque score.
From a suppository.
Yeah, that this,
that's interesting.
Which is, you know, a way to,
circumvent
intravenous chelation, which has actually been shown to be helpful. And that's not been proven, and I think, unfortunately, there's a bit of a commercial impetus to sell these to patients as part of a program to reverse their problems. So I know that some of my colleagues jumped on the bandwagon with this, but I think very few of them still believe in it. I never really caught on to it.
Yeah. That's very interesting. Okay, Geary, thank you for your email. All right. Carolyn emails us, "Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, I have the APOE4 gene mutation."
Oh, boy. Okay.
"What should I be eating? A high-fat diet? A low-fat diet?"
Wow.
"Dr. Hoffman, you inspired me to try the Whole30, and I've been on it since mid-January of this year. Thank you for all your help and the education you're providing to your followers, including me."
What an excellent question that is. And I recently did a gene analysis, which I'm going to write about in a future article and maybe do a podcast on it. And I was relieved to see that I'm a double APOE3, which is actually a more benign profile when it comes to Alzheimer's risk. Mm-hmm. The way it works is that you get two hits, and having one APOE4 increases your risk of Alzheimer's maybe, I don't know, 2.5 times. And if you have a double hit, did she said she had a double hit?
She said she has the APOE4 gene mutation. We don't know.
We don't know whether it's a double hit.
So
if it's one, it's not so bad. It somewhat increases. But if it's double, it's very bad. It's like very high risk. And I've seen estimates where it's as high as 60% risk of dementia.
But is that the end-all and be-all? Because this
no.
gene can be turned on or off depending on how
not only that,
we're going to eat.
Not only that, but I looked at, you know, I was poring over this late into the night on Sunday night, and because I just received my results, and I, you know, analyzed my results. And what I found was that there are about 19 genes which are now believed to influence the risk for Alzheimer's.
Wow.
And there are various strengths. And so, actually, I had a few of the bad ones, and I was, oh my goodness, I have a few of the bad ones, but then...
They're probably turned off in you.
But the net result was that the preponderance of genes were protective, okay? Mm-hmm. But even if you have the gene, it's actually been shown that you can slow progression. And the work of Neil Bredesen, Dr. Bredesen, I forget his first name, we talked about it. We interviewed him.
Yeah.
He worked with patients who have APOE4 mutations and has shown that you can actually slow the progression or reverse it. Mm-hmm. But it's through lifestyle. It's through adequate sleep. It's through better diet. It's through specific supplements. It's by taking potentially aspirin as a medication. Mm-hmm. And then there's also a group at McMaster University in Toronto that's doing similar work with a poly pill of nutrients that... we've talked about in a podcast, which are anti-inflammatory and brain-preserving nutrients. And that they have achieved real success, first in an animal model, now they're going to look at humans. And so this is a topic that it's too big to do in just a Q&A with Layla. We'll have to, you know, refer you to specific podcasts that we've done. The interview with Dr. Bredesen is one. Mm-hmm. You can access Dr. Bredesen's paper. I posted his paper on Facebook. But if you go Dr. Bredesen protocol, you'll probably find all the components of the protocol. It's very complex. It's a lot of supplements.
Yeah.
It's lifestyle modification. It's exercise, stress reduction.
And it's definitely a lower glycemic diet.
Oh, big time.
Big time.
So let's
right
talk
there.
About the diet.
Yeah. So generally... not a low-fat diet, but a higher-fat, lower-carbohydrate diet.
The orthodox view of this used to be you should have no fats.
Yes,
when you
I remember.
This.
Just
and,
even a few years
but they
ago.
But flipped the switch on that. It's not about so much low-fat, because we now think that a bigger culprit in promoting brain changes is the glycosylation.
Yes.
Advanced glycation end products.
AGEs.
AGEs.
Apropos acronym. Yeah.
Insulin resistance that affects the brain. So-called type 3 diabetes. And these are, and, you know, so one can even make an argument for the opposite, a ketogenic diet.
Exactly.
Which
exactly.
is actually helpful and has been shown to be useful in patients with dementia.
And I believe, I may be wrong, that there may be an association for those with the APOE4 gene mutation. They tend to have a higher cholesterol, but that may be because they have a higher cholesterol. That cholesterol is trying to protect them.
That's a very good point. Yes.
So, which is very, very interesting.
Yes.
These
and
people should
the
never be on a statin.
Lowering the cholesterol is not the answer.
It's not.
You know, is that the cholesterol is kind of like... insulation on the wires.
Yeah.
You know, it keeps the nerve transmission going because there's a lot of cholesterol in the brain. Mm-hmm. We know that the brain is loaded with cholesterol and therefore
40 to 60% of it.
And
therefore
what do? You deprive the body of cholesterol and bring the cholesterol way down. Is that a good idea? Also these patients, by the way, have a higher risk of heart disease, APOE4.
You know. Okay. So there it's a bit of a double-edged sword, but it's not all about the cholesterol and heart disease either.
Yeah,
so your triglycerides are going to come down a ketogenic or a low-carb diet anyway.
The ideal thing, since this is all theoretical, right, mm-hmm. would be to identify these people now with genetic testing that's available mm-hmm. at an early age and separate them in two groups and probably do it from very early age, maybe from birth, and in a controlled experiment have people follow an ultra-low-fat diet versus a paleo-style diet.
How are we going to do that? We have to put them in a metabolic chamber.
And watch them for 50 years.
And watch them for 50 years. Follow them around. Make sure they don't go to the pizzeria.
Right.
Or something. Yeah. Yeah.
Can you imagine that? But that's not really feasible, is it?
No. No.
You could use an animal model where the animal lifespans are shorter, but do animals express the same gene in the same way that humans do?
Probably not.
We know, for example, that you can show that if you feed mice, steak and lard, they get atherosclerosis, but that's not what they eat anyway.
Right.
It's like, mice eat.
Same with rabbits. They don't eat that.
Right.
That's not what they eat. So, yeah. So, Carolyn, you should definitely be, first of all, you should read Grain Brain, because Dr. David Perlmutter, he self-discloses that he has the APOE4
right.
mutation, as I believe does his father, who has Alzheimer's.
Right.
And so,
Dr. Perlmutter is in full possession of his faculties.
Absolutely.
And he's a little younger than I am, but he's doing pretty well.
Yeah, yeah. So
I mean,
that would
I
be
only
a
wish I had the faculties that he has, because he's a brilliant guy.
Yeah.
So one can do pretty okay with APOE4, mm-hmm. but I know him personally. He is very, very rigorous about a paleo low-carb diet.
Yeah.
He exercises and he's doing mm-hmm. all the right stuff.
Mm-hmm. So read Grain Brain, Carolyn. Okay. Thank you very much for your question. We've got an email from Brian. I know Dr. Hoffman enjoys studies, and here's one I'm interested in as someone following active surveillance.
That would be for his prostate
cancer.
In other words, he has a low Gleason score, and they're allowing him to not get definitive treatment with surgery or with radiation, and he is doing, quote, the natural approach.
Exactly. He wants to know what you think of bromelain for cancer, but before we even get to that, he finds this quote a bit unnerving. Keep in mind that a 7.5-gram dose of 5-FU, which is the weight of 3 pennies, would kill 50% of humans given it.
That's a little bit of a non sequitur. Why is he coming up with that?
Because he's afraid of having to possibly do the standard therapies or something like that.
Well,
and what do you think of pineapple instead?
Yeah, see, what that suggests is that would be, even though that's a tiny dose, that's a chemo drug, by the way, not used for prostate cancer. It's used for colon cancer. Mm. Is that, if you make a mistake in dosing it, it becomes a very toxic poison. Hopefully doctors don't make an error by a magnitude of 100 or 1,000, on these. And it's happened in hospitals sometimes. Instead of giving, one microgram, they give 1 milligram or something mm-hmm. of something that's very toxic. That's a 1,000-fold mistake because they're not reading the orders correctly. So I guess what he's expressing is he doesn't want to get conventional treatment, which wouldn't be 5-FU anyway. So get past that. The essence of the question is
bromelain.
Well, bromelain. I don't know.
Enzymes.
I don't know that bromelain per se is the enzyme of choice. I know that Dr. Gonzalez was a big proponent of enzyme therapy for cancer, and the idea there is this: Dr. James Beard, who wrote in the early 20th century about how you can literally strip the protective coating from cancers. Cancers are protected from the immune system and from chemo drugs sometimes by some protective layer.
Yeah.
And that proteolytic enzymes given at high doses can combat cancer. But not bromelain. These are more pancreatic enzymes.
Yeah.
So if you want to know about the enzyme theory, which by the way, I don't use generally in my protocols, mm-hmm. but I know that Dr. Gonzalez did, and his successor, Dr. Isaacson, who is carrying on his work, uses high doses of these proteolytic enzymes in cancers and knows how to use them and knows how to source them, because quality is a concern too. That might be something to investigate.
Right, right.
But not so much bromelain.
Yeah.
You know, bromelain has actually been shown to have the property that it helps to, if you're taking antibiotics, it actually helps the antibiotics maybe penetrate more deeply into tissue.
Oh, really?
Like if you have sinusitis or if you have prostatitis, which is infectious, often it's not. It gets the antibiotic deep within the tissue.
Bromelain is also especially good for helping to prevent adhesions, scar tissue after surgery. We recommend it. What else were we suggesting for prostate cancer? Pectisol comes to mind.
Well, and so many things, and once again, I'd refer you to encyclopedic articles I've written on prostate cancer, but among the things, you know, green tea, curcumin, higher dose of vitamin D, the right kind of vitamin E, which is gamma tocopherol, not alpha tocopherol, selenium, but the type we're using, the seleno...
Right, the...
selenocysto...
Cysteine.
Right.
Rather than the selenomethionine. Right.
Because selenomethionine came up short in the SELECT study, but it may be the type of selenium.
We like sulforaphanes.
We like Revail or Provail, which is a flaxseed extract, or eating a lot of dietary flax.
Phytogard.
We like sulforaphane. We like DIM actually has a role to play. Dienyl methane, which is also from cabbage. Chiolic aged garlic extract, cruciferous vegetables. What's the allium family has anti-cancer effects, which are onions and garlic. But chiolic seems to support the immune system in terms of supporting the immune system. Empower, AHCC is good. There are a variety of things we use for prostate cancer.
And you want to eat as clean as possible. This is very, very important. You want to source your foods. You want to make sure they're organic.
No xenoestrogens.
No xenoestrogens. Stay away from plastics. Don't put them in the microwave. Don't keep your plastic water bottle in the car where it gets hot. Beware even your personal grooming products, the phthalates, the parabens, all of these things which are gender benders and behave as xenoestrogens in your body. And eat well-sourced meat, always grass-fed, always organic, free-range, all of that. You want to eat as cleanly as possible.
Right.
Yeah.
That's in short what it is, but, you know, I think people with prostate cancer deserve a shot at, you know, targeted nutritional support.
Yes.
You know, where they consult with a health practitioner. And then now I think we have a pretty good idea of what works for we call it active holistic surveillance, which is a term coined by my good colleague, Dr. Aaron Katz, who is at Winthrop University Hospital and practices also here in New York. He's a pioneer in allowing men to not get aggressive therapy and to undertake lifestyle measures. And it's very successful. And I've seen men, you know, really not need further treatment.
Which is wonderful, you know, considering the side effects of surgery, incontinence, impotence, all of that. Nobody needs that. So, vitamin C drips, that's another IV vitamin C. Intravenous vitamin C is helpful.
Right.
All right. Brian, best of luck to you.
We have time for, is there such a thing as a quick question?
A quick question? Oh. Yes, okay. Now that fat is not the enemy, which is healthier, a turkey burger or a hamburger?
What's your take? You have an interesting take on poultry, right?
Yeah.
You're not a big poultry fan.
I'm not a huge poultry fan. Apparently, it's more of an omega-6 bomb.
Okay.
Than grass-fed red meat.
Right.
I found this out at a medical conference, which was very, very interesting.
So the ratio of the fats is not as favorable.
Exactly. And it's very hard to find really true free-range poultry.
I had one this weekend.
Uh-huh.
And I'm still eating it. I made chicken salad out of it last night. I added some paleo mayonnaise, with avocado oil and some celery and some onions. And I seasoned it with turmeric.
Delicious.
Chicken salad.
Yeah.
And I guess I could put some raisins in it or something like that if you want that. But it's really, it was...
Or
it was
grapes.
It was my... Grapes.
Grapes.
It was my main
green
course.
Green grapes.
Yes,
in half.
Green grapes. Nice. You know, the chicken, it was the chicken that keeps on giving because I had, you know, I had one serving, then I had the leftovers and cold, and now I've taken, you know, the carcass, you know, we kind of stripped the carcass, but I got a lot of meat off it. It was tastier. It was actually a little chewier because it was a chicken that got exercise.
It got exercise.
You know, it had better muscle tone, and it was a little gamier. It was a little bigger, too, because the chickens now are killed very young and are very small. So, you know, one should source better poultry. So, yeah, my take on that is that poultry can be part of a balanced diet, but I think that there's some people say, well, I only eat red meat. Well, I think that
you don't have to say that anymore.
You're in a bit of a fool's paradise if you think that poultry is so much better than red meat. And especially the poultry that's, you know, laden with, mostly they're so-called antibiotic-free, but hormone-free, antibiotic-free. But
interestingly, according to this doctor, and I forget his name, but it was at the American College of Nutrition Conference, turkey is worse than chicken.
Yeah.
Which was interesting. But we're talking about commercial poultry
so
now. We're
what
not
you're saying
talking
is,
about...
Don't feel, you know, a lot of people...
Eat them both.
Some people say, oh, I have a turkey burger, it's better.
Yeah, no,
because
not
the hamburger's bad. So...
And in the ground turkey, you don't know what else they put in there. So.
Right. Yeah. So I don't know. I don't mind turkey sausage. I have that sometimes. Natural turkey sausage. Mm-hmm. I like the flavor of it.
I like turkey.
But you know, when it comes to hamburgers, I don't preferentially get turkey burgers because I think they're healthier.
Or do turkey sausage because you're avoiding pork. You want to get naturally sourced pork.
Right.
Obviously.
And I do. So. I have what's called chorizo.
Chorizo. Seasoned with garlic.
Right, and it's very spicy, and that's pork, you know, which
delicious.
Some people is not on the menu, but it's D'Artagnan makes a good version of that. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you for your question. I don't have a name on this email, but thank you for your question.
Yeah,
it's
a good question.
Eat them all. Just source them well.
Yeah, no, that's a good question. All right. Great questions today. I want to thank you for joining us. A reminder, many of the supplements that we talk about, you know, we rattle off a lot of names. Some of these things are hard to source. Go to drhoffman.com and click on the shop button. Find our Hoffman Center store, and you'll get access to many of the fine supplements that we give to Hoffman Center patients, and thereby also support this enterprise, which is free, but involves some time and effort of production. We rely on your support to continue providing all this wonderful information. Thanks for joining us.
And thank you, everybody.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.